Oregon about his stance on the Olympics. Our partner publication, The Ubisi, brings you a look at this week's campus news. And we take a look at TED Talks alumni Sir Ken Robinson's talk on campus last week. We have all this plus sports and your weekend weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. First, I'm happy to present this weekly series with the Ubisi, a look at campus news with Samantha Jung, Tara Martellaro, and Charlize Gordon, who are in studio this afternoon bringing us the headline from this week's front page.
Hi, I'm Samantha Jung for Charlize Gordon and Tara Martello, and this is this week's top stories. After a year of negotiations, the project to build a new sub, known as the SubRenew Project, is to be managed by UBC Properties Trust, according to VP Students Brian Sullivan. The project has the largest investment of student funds in the history of UBC, with students contributing $85 million in student fees to the $110 million project. The AMS had argued for many months that they should retain exclusive control of both the architect selection process and the project manager. As of now, both parties are going ahead under the assumption that Properties Trust will be their project manager and the AMS will choose the architect. The AMS are scheduled to have selected one by January 2010.
The announcement of SFU's acceptance into the NCAA came in July as the university was officially welcomed into the Great Northwest Athletic Conference for the 2010-2011 season, a year sooner than the project 2011-2012 date. However, while SFU has secured schedules for next fall, the Klan may not be able to compete for GNAC and NCAA championships, given the university has pushed its NCAA plans forward a year in advance and is not a full member yet. For SFU teams currently in the Canadian West Division, the immediate jump to the NCAA eliminates the transition year for what would have provided coaches the extra time to beef up their rosters to NCAA competition standards.
His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama is familiar to us as the figurehead of a contentious, politically charged campaign for the separation of Tibet from the People's Republic of China. But the purpose of his visit to the Chan Center a week ago was not to talk about Tibet. It was to participate in the Vancouver Peace Summit. As the first Dalai Lama to travel to the West, he is a rock star presence, selling out his appearances even as tickets to the Peace Summit ranged up to $200 each. The goals of the summit were to educate people on the means of compassion and inner peace in hopes that these ideas would translate into further tangible actions as a means of moving forward.
UBC Athletics has finally come through with their promise to provide a practice space for Forestry's larger sports team. Tensions built when UBC Athletics removed the team's larger sports field at the southwest corner of the athletic fields in April 2008. To put in a baseball diamond. Athletics said that a new field was in the works and that it would be completed in 5 months, but a year later the team was still left in the sawdust. KB Tour, Associate Director of Facilities and Business Development for UBC Athletics, told the UBC last year that poor soil conditions, cold weather, and management issues contributed to the delays in completion. Kit Burke, representative for Forestry Undergraduate Society Lager Sports, said he received the email in July announcing completion of the space. The Lager Sports team practices 3 times a week on Sunday afternoons and Tuesday and Thursday evenings.
The AMS is reviewing their membership with the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, or CASA, which is a national lobbying organization that they are members of. However, they are sending emails to students with false information in what appears to be an effort to sway students against the organization. The email contained 4 points that CASA's national director, Arati Sharma, have said are false statements. The AMS is meeting with CASA this Thursday to address their concerns.
Plans to locate an end-of-life care hospice near student residents Vanier and Marine Drive have been scrapped due to negative feedback from community and student consultation. Joe Stott, the Director of Campus and Community Planning at UBC, said that while the community generally supports the concept of a hospice, they have received objections to the location and that they will be looking for a new site. Requirements for the hospice site include easy wayfinding, a residential atmosphere, and green space.
The UBC Thunderbirds fell 50-26 to the Calgary Dinos on Saturday, losing their 6th straight game at home, as the T-Birds were unable to defend against the Dinos' dynamic rush offense and were equally unsuccessful in amassing a ground attack of their own. The Dinos are by far the best in the conference at defending against the running game, holding their opponents to an average of 85 yards rushing per game. UBC heads out east this weekend for a match against the 3-1 Saskatchewan Huskies, where UBC will again be underdogs.
More than 250 students and alumni piled into the Life Sciences Center last Saturday, buzzing with anticipation for the second annual TEDx Terry Talks, a student conference modeled after the well-known TED conference that features the world's brightest minds giving talks on technology, entertainment, and design. Seven UBC students and one alumnus shared ideas they felt passionate about. Jeff Costella, who helped organize the talks, is here today to talk to us about the event. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you, Tara?
I'm well, thank you. Can you briefly tell us what the TEDx Talks were about this year?
Sure. So TEDx Terry Talks is a program that's put on by the Terry Project on campus, and it's a takeoff on the TED program from TED.com. If you're not familiar with it, it's a series of speakers from around the world who get the chance to speak about their passions to a wide audience. We've paired up with TED this year from Santa Barbara and become a TEDx event, and it's the same idea here on campus where we get eight students and one alumni to talk about their passions from a wide variety of fields, and I think we found a really good equilibrium this year between all the different sciences and arts and humanities.
This is still an early project. What is Terry looking at improving for next year?
Well, I think, first of all, the most important thing is that we're really, really happy with how it went. We had great speakers, we had a really good audience that was really engaged all day, so we haven't really had meetings yet on how we're going to improve it for next year. There have been some talks about moving it towards the Chan Center out of the LSC, although that kind of boosts up our expense and also how many students need to come out to it. So we're taking it step by step, but we've had a hugely positive response from the student population so far. So we're definitely looking forward to making improvements for next year.
So how can students get involved in next year's TED Talks?
Well, the best way you can get involved with TED Talks is to kind of stay in tune with Terry. And Terry's this kind of strange, amorphous blog on the UBC server somewhere that talks about anything from science to politics to humor to the funny YouTube videos that have just come out. So you can check that out at terry.ubc.ca, and there's lots of writers for that. So checking that out is the first step. We also have Facebook pages on Facebook, so you can look up Terry or Terry Talks, TEDx Terry Talks on Facebook. And this year we're also trying to get our wish together. So if you're not familiar, one of our speakers was granted a wish from their Terry Talks, and that was Tahira Ibrahim. And she wants to start a multicultural, multi-faith kind of organization on campus to oversee a lot of the different groups and how they're working to make sure they're interacting better. So if you're interested in getting started with that, you can jump on Facebook and check it out as well under the TEDx Terry Talks Wish. Just search for that.
Well, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Tahira. Have a great day.
I'm Tara Martellaro for Samantha Jung and Charlie Scordin for the UBC's Top Stories of the Week.
Thanks, guys. It's now time for a break, but stay tuned. Up next, we'll take a look at Sir Ken Robertson's speech to UBC students last week.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a Big Sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
It's our pledge drive here on NPR, and we have a 20-minute field recording of a tumluku, which is a Bosnian instrument which can only be played when you have a pierced scrotum and three kids who have been killed by a landmine. It's unlistenable radio! Do you understand me?
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Totally listenable radio.
Okay, guys. Sorry. You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Following the ongoing and immensely popular TED Talk series, Sir Ken Robinson spoke to a packed audience at the Chan Center this past week. For a look at what he had to say, here's Janelle Chung.
Sir Ken Robinson marked the beginning of UBC's Terry Talks last Wednesday as students and faculty alike packed the Chan Center to listen to Robinson's talk on his new book, The Element, How Finding Your Passion Changes Everything. His previous talk at the TED conference is one of TED.com's most popular videos and has been widely spread. His last talk, a mixture of his characteristic quick-witted humor and passion for education, was entitled Schools Kill Creativity, and criticized our education system for its de-emphasis on creativity and focus on standardized tests. On Wednesday, Robinson acknowledged the declining value in university degrees with respect to getting a job. He believes that the current education system only has a single concept of education, academics. He thinks this underestimates human capabilities and possibilities because it reinforces our thinking that education is a linear process. He rejects this idea of linear education by citing Paul McCartney's experience in school. McCartney and fellow Beatle George Harrison were led to believe that they had no musical abilities. The teacher, Robinson mused, just couldn't recognize their creative talent because she wasn't looking for it. Robinson proposes education to be organic and to be, quote, a creative adventure, not a production line, end quote. The education system should create a space where creativity can be learned. Robinson likens the situation to that of Death Valley, where nothing can grow because it never rains. However, in 2004, it did rain, and plants grew for the first time. The seeds of possibility were always there, but the conditions needed to be right so the plants could flourish, much like the situation with children. He says the education system should strive to be climate controlled. Robinson ended with a call for the education system to transform and not to reform. An edited version of Sir Ken Robinson's appearance will be made available in the future on UBC's Terry Talks website, terry.ubc.ca.
Thanks to Janelle for that. This past week, Newsy Richard Kemick spoke with Derek Corrigan, mayor of Burnaby, about his stance on the Olympics coming to Vancouver.
Mayor Derek Corrigan joins us today. Mayor Corrigan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Burnaby, and I'm looking forward to the interview.
Oh, thank you very much for joining us. So I'd like to talk to you today about the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. How will the Vancouver 2010 Olympics affect Burnaby, and what is your stance on the Olympic Games?
Well, let me answer the second part first. Burnaby supported the Olympic Games very early on. We did so because Simon Fraser University was the proposed site for the speed skating oval, and we saw a real benefit to SFU as a result of the Olympics coming in that they would finally be able to accomplish some of the athletic facilities that they required through the largesse of the Olympics coming to our community. So, you know, we went in essentially under false pretenses. We were told by John Furlong that absolutely SFU was going to be the site and that Burnaby really should be supportive of SFU. And we agreed, said we would support the Olympics, knowing that there was going to be a benefit to the university and the students at the university, many of whom come from our community and surrounding suburban communities. So we certainly saw that as being optimistic. Later on, as you know, the speed skating oval was taken from SFU and ended up in Richmond. Richmond committed, I think, $100 million to the project, and SFU could certainly not afford to put that kind of money into the Olympic project. So eventually they were excluded, but we remained on the books as being supportive of the Olympics, although, you know, it's clear that our council then had significant concerns because I think many of them felt that they'd been betrayed.
So as of right now, is the council for, or do they have an official stance on whether they're for or against the Olympics?
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics, and so there hasn't been any revocation of that vote that was originally taken, and there's been no need to, because I think that you can come through as positive about the idea of the Olympics and the competition and still have objections to the corporatism that's attached to the Olympics and the amount of money that may be spent by the provincial government, and certainly the lack of transparency in those expenditures. So many of the projects we've objected to have not really been Olympic projects, but have certainly been, in at least in the mind of the province, necessary to the Olympics.
And speaking of the provincial government, in April 2007 you said, quote, "Perhaps some of you can now understand why it is so difficult to work with the provincial government. They ignore our advice, make unilateral decisions, and proceed without consultation. Riding high in the polls, they do not think it necessary to have our support or even to inform us of their intentions." Can you describe the relationship between you and the provincial government as to date concerning the Olympics?
Well, it hasn't improved, but I think that probably the relationship that we have is true for many of the other municipalities. They're often not quite as vocal. I'm very well known for being absolutely frank in my opinions and attempting as best I can to let the public know exactly where I'm coming from at any given time in regard to our relationships with the federal, provincial government, or with other municipalities. So, you know, I try not to hide things behind a veneer of civility when it's not working well. And I think clearly the relationship with the provincial government and municipalities right across British Columbia has been poisoned over the last years, and certainly has only gotten worse since they were reelected, with just a multitude of downloads, problems associated with their misinformation that much of what the provincial government said during the election was patently untrue, and that many of the people who voted for them were essentially tricked into providing their votes, thinking that circumstances were much different than they really are.
What type of relationship do you as the mayor have with VanOck?
None. We don't have any relationship with them. I guess probably one of the real difficulties that we encountered, you'll remember that Burnaby put on the World Police Fire Games.
Mm-hmm.
And the World Police Fire Games were a massive success. We were able to generate a multiplier of about $50 million into the Lower Mainland economy at a time when it was most necessary, when tourism was fading, when hotels were unoccupied. We brought in those games, and the provincial government and Burnaby cooperated in providing the funding for those games, and certainly with the help of TELUS. The difficulty we had was there was virtually no involvement from VanOck. VanOck did not take part, and though we offered them many times to at least to try out some of their security and other issues, their volunteers in the police fire games, they were disinclined to becoming involved. And that goes back to the subject of corporatism, is that the World Police Fire Games were sponsored as a lead sponsor by TELUS, and Bell is the lead sponsor for the Olympics. That meant that no one from the Olympics could become involved in a project where TELUS was the lead sponsor, which is a pretty good illustration of the kind of corporatism that really controls the Olympics and controls the policies surrounding the Olympics. It's not the best interest of the athletes or the citizens or the host cities or the host country. It's all in the interests of those multinational corporations.
The BCCLA executive director, David Eby, has spoken out what he considers to be VanOck's inevitable infringements on the rights of citizens who protest during the games. Do you share Mr. Eby's concerns in this?
I do. I think that there are real problems with the approach taken by the Olympics. You know, one of the things that often they are able to do is they're able to put such great fear in people that everyone believes that there's going to be a terrorist incident, and as a result, it's okay to take away people's civil liberties. It's satisfactory that they're able to act in arbitrary manners in ways that wouldn't be acceptable in the normal course of everyday life. But because the Olympics are coming, suddenly they're able to do things that they would never be allowed to do in any other circumstances.
Vancouver obviously has a very visible homeless population, specifically in the area of East Hastings. There's been widespread speculation on what will be done with the homeless community in Vancouver during the Games. To your knowledge, what will be happening with and to the homeless people of the greater Vancouver area during the Olympics?
Well, we're already seeing the effort to drive them into the suburbs. Burnaby is already suffering as a result of what I believe is a very calculated process of driving people out of the downtown east side and pushing them into suburban areas, at least temporarily. They've been doing a big cleanup in the downtown east side. They've been fencing off areas. They've closed down the park. Ostensibly for repairs, is that they've done a lot of things to try to make sure that they clean up the streets in the downtown east side, but they don't clean up the problem, and the problem is just disseminated into other parts of the Lower Mainland, and I find that it's so calculated and it's so abusive, you know, is it don't deal with the real problem, deal with the appearance. And now with the Olympics coming, it's an ugly blot on what is one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
You sit on the Mayor's Council on Regional Transportation, and one of the main concerns that UBC students have with the Olympics is the severe lack of transportation during the Games. How well do you think that the transit system will function during the Olympics?
Well, you know, I often am, you know, I'm concerned about the fact that that students do not actively go out and try to make changes in society. Often I've found now that that students only react when it's them that's affected. When they see their own interests affected, then there's a reaction. You know, I'm frustrated, and I've been frustrated for a long time, that there's such a lack of support out there, as people don't get interested until their personal interests are affected. And as a result, is the provincial and federal government are able to make bad public policy. Now we still have a private secret board making all the decisions in TransLink, and where is the public? Where are the students on that issue? You know, I'm disappointed. Is that you have to be part of the solution, and I get a little tired of the complaining when nobody will stand up to the system and say, we need to support a decent transit system with good governance that recognizes the needs of the public.
You said the Olympic Oval was originally designed to be in Burnaby. It has since been decided that the Olympic Oval is to be placed in Richmond. Is then your opposition to the Olympics in regard to freedom of speech, transit, homelessness, concerns of corporatism, entirely dependent on whether or not a skating rink was built in Burnaby?
That's a good question. Wrong inference, but a good question. None of the principles that I've expressed change one iota, whether the speed skating oval was built at SFU or was built in Richmond. It's ridiculous to assume my position would be any different in regard to civil liberties or corporatism attached to the Olympics. If we would have had the speed skating oval, as my positions have been well known for a long time. In fact, I was a director of BC Civil Liberties, so I've certainly had my strong orientation towards the protection of civil liberties for many decades, and I wouldn't have changed my mind as a result of SFU getting a speed skating oval or not.
What do you think will be the legacy of the Olympic Games once they're finished?
Well, there'll certainly be a lot of money to be paid off, and I think there's going to be a big hangover, as often happens in the Olympics. I mean, this is predictable because it happens in almost every jurisdiction. I think often in the cold light of day, after all the songs and dances and partying are gone, that people will look at things a little bit differently, and there'll be a little bit of a buyer's regret that maybe we should have been more thoughtful about the choices we made.
Now, unfortunately, because of time constraints, we were not able to air the entire interview today. However, I encourage all listeners to go to CITR.ca, click on Studio, then on News to hear the interview in its entirety. Mayor Corrigan gave a very good interview where we also talked extensively about homelessness, the protest campaign No Olympics on Stolen Native Land, as well we got farther in-depth with corporatism and transportation and VANOC and government policy towards the game. Thanks, Brad, and back to you.
Thanks, Richard. Welcome back to News 101. Right now, it's 5:25 and time for Thunderbird Eye on Sports with Wilson Wong.
The UBC Thunderbirds football team simply couldn't stop the Calgary Dinos rushing attack on Saturday afternoon. The visiting Dinos picked up 378 yards on the ground en route to a 50-26 win at Thunderbird Stadium. Stopping the run has been a problem for the Birds all season long, and Canada West rushing leader Matt Walter had his way, picking up 189 yards and one touchdown. Despite the lopsided score, UBC quarterback Billy Green had his best game in a T-Bird uniform, completing 26 of 41 passes for 311 yards and three touchdowns.
We knew we had to come out, play our best, and we never quit. This team, one thing, I've never played on a team that comes out every day, practices, knows, like, you've got to put in so much work, and at halftime we're just like, we look at each other and we're like, let's go, we got to play hard, we can put points up on these guys, and we did.
Green hooked up with Jordan Grieve, Spencer Betts, and Mark McVay for touchdowns in the second half, with running back Dave Boyd finding the end zone earlier in the game. Second-year safety Alex Babalos was all over the field for UBC with 13.5 tackles. His performance was rewarded with a Canada West Defensive Player of the Week award. Babalos now ranks first in the Canada West with 37.5 tackles. UBC visits the Saskatchewan Huskies on Friday night, and you can see the game on Shaw TV at 6 p.m. Nathan Pogue scored two first-half goals to lead Trinity Western to a 2-1 win over UBC in men's soccer Friday night. Matt Allard responded late in the first half for UBC, but their offensive pressure in the second did not yield a goal. Thunderbirds coach Mike Mosher says his players need to do more when they have the ball.
Yeah, we certainly had more possession, but we got to do something with that possession. You're right. You know, just a little bit more creativity in the attacking third of the field, you know, needs to come. You know, we knew exactly what we're going to get from this team. You know, they're a very hard-working team, and the two goals that they get come about because of their hard work, and just can't make mistakes on clearances or, you know, small little mistakes is where those two goals came from.
It was the 20th time these two rivals have met in men's soccer. Trinity Western leads the overall series and has won 5 of the last 7 meetings. The loss also drops UBC's 2009 record to 4-3. It was a much more successful weekend for the women's soccer team. UBC went into league-leading Manitoba and drew 1-1 with the Bisons on Saturday. Kelly Isberg's goal in the 79th minute allowed UBC to grab the tie. Then yesterday, the Thunderbirds easily shut out Regina 5-0. Rachel Sawyer opened the scoring in the 37th minute, then Caitlin Davey knocked home 2 goals in 5 minutes early in the second to put the game away. Carmen Lindsay and Isberg padded the stats with late goals for UBC. The team is now at 2 wins, 2 losses, and 2 ties. The UBC field hockey team suffered their first loss of the season Sunday, dropping a 1-0 game to the Alberta Pandas at Foote Field in Edmonton. UBC had won the first game of their series 3-2 on Saturday. They remain 7 points ahead of second-place Victoria. The UBC men's hockey team suffered a 6-1 defeat yesterday at the hands of the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers. The Birds were outshot 44-11 by the Division I NCAA team. Francois Tuo made 38 saves in the losing cause. Newcomer Max Grassi scored UBC's lone goal, while Vancouver Canucks first-round draft pick in 2009 Jordan Schroeder notched a goal and an assist. UBC also lost 4-0 Saturday against Minnesota Duluth. The women's rugby team split their 2 weekend games against teams from southern Alberta. On Friday, UBC shut out Calgary 46-0 for their first win of the year. Captain Michelle Helmetzi scored 21 of UBC's points on 2 tries, 4 converts, and a drop goal. But on Saturday, the 10th-ranked Birds were shut out themselves, losing by 50 to defending national champions Lethbridge. That's your look back at this weekend's UBC Sports Action. Tune in tomorrow for Wiener's Barbecue at 4:30 for more sports chat. I'm Wilson Wong.
Thanks, Wilson, for that report. Now it's time for this week's weather reports, and for that we go to Alice Wong.
Thanks, Brad. Here's your forecast for October 5th to October 9th. It's October, the leaves are changing colors, the birds are flying south, but it's still remarkably sunny for this time of the year. Actually, the entire forecast for this week will be nothing but sunshine. There is a very large ridge of high pressure building over the Pacific Ocean that is pushing eastwards towards British Columbia. This ridge of high pressure is a very stable air mass, and it is moving very slowly. However, temperatures will be rather cool in the morning and overnight hours because the lack of cloud cover will cause daytime heat to quickly escape back to the atmosphere. So here's the forecast. Monday evening to the overnight, mostly clear with a low of 7 degrees. Tuesday, mostly sunny, high of 15. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high of 16. Thursday, mostly sunny, high of 15. And Friday, mostly sunny, high of 16. We don't usually see this sort of continuous sunshine for October, so be sure to take advantage of this week. Currently, it's 15 degrees and mostly sunny at YVR. That's your weather for this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. For News 101, I'm Alice Wong.
Thanks, Alice. And that's our program for October 5th, 2009. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Brad Pepping for the entire news team at CITR. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track on 101.9 FM CITR.